Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Halloween edition of the show here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. And as I mentioned, tons of texts and tons of thoughts coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll try to go through some of them here. And, Dustin from Abbey chimes in. The season contains multitudes, so no panic here. But that was a very disappointing performance in a nationally hyped game. If this team wants league-wide respect, they've got a long way to go. And I think that's a good way of putting it, too, and getting at what you were talking about, right? Where, hey, it's great to accrue points here, and, you know, you're in no danger of missing the playoffs or anything extreme like that at this juncture, but you're also supposed to be establishing yourself as a legitimate contender. And you can't do that for good in October, but you can start the process. And they haven't started the process, missed an opportunity to really start doing that last night. You know, now they go on the road, they play San Jose on Saturday, and you certainly hope they win that game. It's a good spot for them to bounce back, but it's also until they have a really good, really complete effort against a good team now. It's like, okay, hey, you beat San Jose and Anaheim. That's not going to move the needle a lot for people.
Yeah, but you know what? What I will say is getting out on the road, getting away from the pressure cooker, and they were booed last night, and Pettersson is Bronx cheered whenever he has a poor touch on the power play, which is a little bit too frequently.
Which is a lot.
And, you know, Artur Shelov's got a Bronx cheer on a dump-in last night, right? I mean, it's sort of interesting. Like, we got a text in that I thought was interesting talking about how often Edmonton struggled in the first few months of the year or first few weeks of the year last season. And, you know, one thing I noted to them was, yeah, but under the hood, like, if you were watching those games, it was like Edmonton playing at warp speed and getting stoned by the other goaltender, and then the puck goes to the other end and squirts through Jack Campbell, and you're just like, oh my god, this is hilarious. But you could see and tell that was still a super high-end team. That's what I think we're not seeing, and I think Canucks fans are aware of it, which is why there's some anxiety and disappointment in this market, even though the team's still picking up points, right? Like, I think this market recognizes what good hockey looks like and hasn't seen this team play much of it. Like, what game would you stamp and say the Canucks played really well? I don't think there's
one. Is there one?
Like, maybe Philly? Would you say in Philly?
Yeah, they played well in Philly. But not like, it's not like that's a game you look back on in March and be like, man, remember that Philly game? You know what I mean? It's not that type of game.
We haven't seen like a staple showing.
A blueprint game. We have not seen a blueprint game where it's that a game you can point to and say, that's how we want to play. We've done it. Let's go out and keep replicating that.
Well, and that's something I think Tyler Myers alluded to yesterday when he said, you know, we're still finding our identity, right? Like, we know that it wants to be a little more up-tempo, but you know, and look, the club's 5-on-5 form's not bad, but they're not crushing anybody. Like, it's not like they've been unlucky in net or in terms of their finishing rate. In fact, they've probably been a little bit unlucky in net with Shelov's in and a lot with Lankinen.
Yeah.
But they've effectively gotten what they deserve. Like, their you know, shooting percentage isn't elevated, their save percentage isn't too low. You know, they're very much in the Goldilocks just right zone here. And they have an even goal differential, right? Like, they're not controlling play well enough to sort of offset their bounces at 5-on-5, right? Like, this team looks elite with Quinn Hughes on the ice, and they look lottery bound without, and that's like the shape of it. And we all kind of know it. So that's why it's hard to string together a complete game, right? It's like, I can tell you there have been incredible games from Quinn Hughes. There have been incredible games from Canucks players that share the ice with Quinn Hughes, but it's hard to put together a 60-minute effort when you're two teams, an elite team for 20 minutes a night and you know, hold your breath for 40.
Yeah.
That's the fundamental issue.
And again, it's not just that they've been, you know, mid or average in terms of controlling play, but it's the feeling that they should have the pieces to be more than that, right? And as we've talked about, it's Quinn Hughes versus when he's on the ice and Quinn Hughes when he's off the ice. And as we've said a lot, last year you had Elias Pettersson to float and drive those minutes that Quinn Hughes was spending on the bench. And, you know, I don't want to make last night about Elias Pettersson because obviously it was a really poor team performance, right? I understand that. And there's a lot of guys we could go down the list to talk about what they were doing. You know, Jake DeBrusk, JT Miller, Archer Shelovs, Tyler Myers, et cetera, et cetera. But as we keep talking about, okay, they're not controlling play at all with Quinn Hughes off the ice, like the answer, yeah, hey, do you need more puck moving from your other defenders? Yes, of course you do. Are there other things you can do? Sure. JT Miller, not 100%. I get it. But like, really, the answer is Elias Pettersson. The way this team is structured, the theory of this team, giving Elias Pettersson the contract for 8 years, you're doing that so that he can be an elite play driver. That he doesn't, and he doesn't need Quinn Hughes on the ice to control play.
Who also eats.
Yes. Right? Like that, you, and if you're paying him to be that, and he's not even anything close to that, your team is going to struggle. Your team is going to be in a really tough spot to succeed. And, you know, he has the encouraging signs, the baby steps on the road trip. I don't think those were fake. They were real. There were real, genuine steps forward, scores against Pittsburgh, and then it's back to looking as poor as it's looked throughout this whole stretch over the last couple of games. Last night, obviously, you know, the moment where he really hesitates to shoot and then just puts it in Markstrom's crest, a lot of...
I thought that play, the reaction was a bit much. Like, he had so much space and time. I think he was hoping that traffic... Like, there was a player skating toward the net.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was hoping to get some traffic to the net. So I think he was waiting. And then he didn't shoot it right at his crest. I actually thought that play was wildly misunderstood. I thought he was shooting quite smartly for that area between the glove and the pad. That was the play that I think a lot of Canucks fans seized on that I just fundamentally saw differently. I was like, actually, I don't think that one's on him. I thought he got a pretty good shot off.
Whatever. That's fine. But you don't dispute my larger point, right?
No,
that there was no juice over these last couple of games for Elias Pettersson.
There's no juice.
No juice whatsoever.
A juiceless performance.
And that, man, to have it look like, okay, hey, at least it's on the right trajectory and then just completely flatline in these last couple of games, that's really tough. And we're going to be continuing to have these conversations about, oh, can they be more than mid controlling play until he starts to get it going? And the thing that's really starting to frustrate me is... It's obviously such a big issue. We haven't really heard from Elias Pettersson about it, right? And you talked about trying to get him to open up a little bit on the road trip. He's not really interested in talking about where his game is at. And, you know, and I should credit a texter from the intermissions last night who kind of pointed out, like, man, we're hearing he's got to move his feet an awful lot from Rick Tocchet. And that's great. He does have to move his feet more. But Is that really all that's going on here? You know what I mean? And look, I get it. The team's not going to come out and give us a detailed blow-by-blow of all the things that are happening behind the scenes. And, you know, you don't do that. You're not going to do that to a star player who's struggling. I get it. But it just seems like this is such a big deal for the team. There's so much mystery. It's so legitimately baffling, and it feels almost unprecedented in recent NHL history. And I haven't gone through the list of, you know, guys who are as good as Pettersson who have had slumps this long or this perplexing or anything, but it's certainly rare. It's certainly very rare, and there's just such an absence of explanation, plausible explanation, information. We haven't heard anything from management about it. How did they look at this? Like, really, since training camp, where they gave him votes of confidence? I'm kind of at my limit here. Like, there's got to be more to it than, oh, he's got to move his feet. Is the knee a real thing? Does the team see the knee as a real thing?
It's got to be. It's impossible to understand this without accepting that at least part of it's a physical limitation.
And again, I think you referenced the NHL edge data
is clear
on both skating and shooting.
Yep.
But then if it's physical,
I just don't know how much that means. I want to note this. There's a lot being made about the NHL edge data, and I think it's fair to note descriptively, but it's like, I haven't cross-referenced, like, what's the R squared on how players maintain this and what the small samples look like. Like, I don't really have a good sense of how repeatable it is yet. Honestly, that's probably a good project for me to undertake now that we have three or four years of data. Maybe a little project for the Four Nations break, but while I think it's interesting to cite, I wouldn't, like, take it to the bank. You know what I mean? I just want to note that.
Well, and even, and I would say maybe not so much with the skating data, but with the shot data, like, that could be physical, but it could also be mental, right? You're not looking in for opportunities to really step in and uncork a powerful shot. So it's even that, it doesn't strictly point to a physical explanation, right? There can be confidence and mentality stuff that goes into that as well. But again, I'm not expecting, Jim Rutherford to hold a press conference and just open the floor and spill the beans on Elias Pettersson. But it just feels like this situation is hanging over the team. And I know on the morning show, they were kind of asking the question of, is it weighing on the team and on the other players? I don't see how it couldn't.
I don't see how it couldn't.
He's your highest paid player who's been elite for you, and he looks lost. He's a shell of himself on the ice. It has to be weighing on them. And the explanations and the possible solutions we've heard from the team are, one, not very many, and two, increasingly not very plausible or satisfactory here. It's bizarre.
And from the player. Don't let the player off the hook either, right? He's been completely unwilling to publicly address the criticism. Right. And by the way, that's OK. I understand he's obviously going through a bunch. You can see it when you watch him play. But, I'm just saying it's not necessarily the team. Right. Here's the thing. If you explain what's going on, OK, it's understood. If you don't, then your play has to do the talking. Right. And Pettersson's play is talking. And what it's saying is something fans don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Something we don't want to hear, frankly. Right. So anyway.
And by the way, in terms of, I said I haven't gone through the list of guys who are as good and productive who've had this drop off. People are texting in Huberto, but Huberto is so much older.
Yeah. Huberto's
than Pettersson,
30.
And he switched from a really good situation in Florida, right, to a not so great situation in Calgary. So there's a lot, those are explanations that are a lot easier to understand versus Elias Pettersson in the heart of his prime, in a situation with players he's been really productive in, completely dropping off.
And as great as Huberto is, and Huberto is a great player, Huberto's age 19 season was 31 points in 48 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Huberto didn't have his first point per game season until year 7 of his career. He was Pettersson's age when he had his first 90 plus point season, right? Well, Pettersson was 66 points off the bat. Even Huberto, as great as he was and is, completely different caliber of player. Without question, a completely different caliber of player.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, didn't happen until he was 30. I've never seen anything like this. I've looked. I can't find historical comps. I have no idea what's going on. The player won't discuss it. The team's explanations are unsatisfying. This is year one of an 8-year deal paying $11.6 million, and the club has to figure out how to get this sorted, because if Pettersson's not in form, this club's baseline probably high enough to make the playoffs, maybe high enough to win a round, maybe high enough to make it to the conference final, maybe, but you're not getting where you want to go if Pettersson's not a difference maker for you. We all know it.
Yep. And I'm at a loss for possible solutions.
No, there's...
Right? I think the team probably is. I'm at the point now where it's almost stop trying things.
Well, no. There's a couple things
okay, this is your line. You're going to have a regular shift. Go out there. We're not commenting. We're not tinkering. Whatever, we're not. If somebody asks us, we're just going to say, I thought he was fine, and we're not going to say anything more, and just go out and play, and we're going to do our best to ignore the situation for a few weeks.
I mean, there's a couple things you could do, okay? There are a couple things you could do to make the sledding a little bit easier, in my mind, anyway. I think putting Garland with Pettersson was a good first step. Pettersson still leads this team in 5-on-5 ice time. How wild is that?
Yeah.
So he's still playing. Now, anyway, 5-on-5 only, right? Pettersson has 18 offensive zone draws so far this season, and 29 in the defensive end. He actually has the most defensive zone starts on the team in the early going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's a 38% basically offensive zone start rate, comparing the two numbers together. JT Miller's at 64%. Okay, so there's one thing you could do is you could flip that. Now, maybe that doesn't work because you're concerned about Miller playing through what he's playing through and getting back to 100% as quickly as possible. So maybe it's something you have to adjust. Maybe it's something where Teddy Bluger takes on more of the defensive heavy lifting as a specialist. But you could absolutely, territorially anyway, zone match Pettersson more favorably than the Canucks have, right? And in fact, from a zone matching perspective, the Canucks have not buried him, but certainly counted on him to be like reliable and positionally sound as opposed to offensively oriented. The other thing you could do, and this is the most obvious one, is you could amp up the amount of time that he spends with Quinn Hughes. Okay, like JT Miller, we went over it, has played, the 60-ish, 60-plus, it's almost 70 minutes. He's played well over 50%. He's like 66% of JT Miller's ice time has been spent with Quinn Hughes at 5-on-5, right? They are a five-man unit that the Canucks have used to attack their opponents. And you could absolutely begin to get more sort of Pedersen shifts out there with your top pair. The gap between how much time Hughes has spent with Miller and has spent with Pedersen is about 20 minutes. A little bit less than that. Pretty close to 20 minutes. Over the course of 9 games, that's not insignificant. That's 2.5 minutes per game, right? That's like an extra 3 yep. shifts. So you could flip that dynamic and try and use Pedersen's line as a five-man unit with Hughes. Now, I guess the problem there is, do you get the same results, right? Like, is Miller going at so much higher a clip right now that would harm your ability to win matchups at the top of your lineup? Maybe. But anyway, there are a couple of like really simple deployment tweaks that I do think the team should consider, because getting Pedersen out of this needs to be top priority. Like, I do think that it's become, I'm trying to think of the word, like unsustainable or like unworkable. Like, it's a problem if it persists. It's untenable in terms of how this conversation in the market is surrounding this issue. It's untenable in terms of the team's results. It does feel like it's getting to the level of a distraction for everyone involved. So, you know, to me anyway, those are sort of the two things you could consider here that the club hasn't done to this point, where they're pretty straightforward things. And I would do it at this point, just because either Pedersen gets back on track or it's going to overwhelm this season. I think we've seen that in the first month.
I think you're right about those couple of tweaks, but I also just think at a certain point you have to stop.
I was just trying to be constructive.
You have to stop devoting all of your time and energy to one player, right?
Yes.
And it's a catch-22, because you're right. You absolutely he has to be good. And as a coach, you can't just abdicate responsibility. And I know people will text in, well, you know, he's so highly paid, he shouldn't need the coach to get him going. That's all fair, but you're also trying to win games, right? You're trying to be a Stanley Cup contender, and you need him to be at the top of his game to do that. So it's a very difficult position, because yes, of course you're going to desperately try to get him going and figure it out. But also, I think there's, again, diminishing returns on that effort and that energy. And as you say, it becomes untenable, it becomes a distraction. And I think at a certain point, you kind of just have to, okay, this is the situation we're in. He has to work through it individually. We could do a couple of things, a couple of tweaks to maybe make that a little bit easier for him. But it's not going to come from the coaching staff, right? It's not going to be the 19th reminder to move his feet that gets it done, right? It's going to be internal from Elias Pettersson, or it's not going to happen. Connor and Coquitlam text in, the solution is the power play clicks, and he finds it from there. I mean, that would help a lot if the power play was clicking.
That would help everybody.
If he was picking up some secondary assists on the power play here and there, and your production looks a lot better, you get a little bit of confidence, you deflect in a shot, something like that, that would go a long way. I think that would probably go a long way to just helping, as you said, everybody feel a little bit more confident, right? Because there's something so draining, and obviously the four-minute one in the first period stands out, where you're just failing time after time after time in really discouraging ways. It's you are. What do you want me to say?
I'm sorry. It was just put funny.
It's true. And it sucked the life out of the building, and it's got to be very draining on your confidence as well when you're just having no success whatsoever on something that you've been good at in the past and should be one of the one of the strengths of your game. And for those five guys right now, and especially the big four, Miller, Hughes, Pedersen, and Besser, I got to imagine that's weighing on them too.
So I don't know if you know this, because I don't bring it up that much, but it's one of those things that
I used to work for the Panthers.
No, I bring that up all the time.
That was the joke.
Oh, okay. Did you know I used to, do you want me to read my whole CV?
No.
So the Canucks have 5 power play goals, 4 in 9 games, okay, and 2 against. Now, I don't know if you know this about me, but I hate power play percentage. I think it's deeply misleading.
I feel like I did know that about
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I think it's. I just think it's not the way that we should be like catching and measuring power play strength. There's a couple stats that I think are more instructive.
I should say, if I didn't know that about you, I feel like I would have guessed it.
Yeah, fair enough. There's a couple stats that are more instructive. Team's overall goals rate is better in terms of like us calibrating just how efficient they are at manufacturing power play goals. And then the other one that I care about a lot is power play goal differential, right?
Yep.
Because why do we always factor in how many goals you surrender in every other game state, but on the power
play? But not on the power play.
On the power play, we cite a number that like you can give up 9 shorties in a year, but you're like 28%, and people are like, they have the best power play. It's like, no, they don't. Anyway, Canucks are +3 on the power play this season. The following teams are +3 or lower. The Islanders, the Leafs, the Flames, the Blues, the Capitals, and the Buffalo Sabres. Some surprising names on that list, by the way. But the point is, I think, that's not good company, right? There's only 6 teams in the league with a power play goal differential this anemic. It hurts. Like, it hurts your ability to win games. It has hurt this team's ability to win games. Maybe they're able to get the key goal that jump starts last night. You know, maybe they're able to get the goal that turns the Carolina game into a win. They're just not getting those goals right now, and it's exacerbating everything for the team, especially when you consider that if you remove one game against Chicago, they're +1 on the power play this season, right? It's just like, you know, great, you scored against the Blackhawks.
Yeah. And again, it's not close. No. It's not like it's been unlucky. It's just completely off, and they're feeding the other team in a lot of situations.
Yeah, it's generating no shots. Like, no shot attempts. Even worse. Honestly, if your shot rate is low, but you're at least getting attempts, at least you're set up.
Yep.
Like, they're not even getting set up. There's nothing there right now. There is some fancy snapping the puck around, I suppose.
Not much. And even last night,
it just goes nowhere.
They got set up off an offensive zone faceoff, right? So they didn't have to gain the zone, which is great because that's been such a struggle for them. But then they're passing it around. It's mostly on the perimeter. There's one kind of cross ice kind of along the goal line pass that didn't really amount to much. But it's not the classic thing with a struggling power play, right? Is, oh, they're passing too much. They're trying to be too fancy. But it's not like they're looking like the Harlem Globetrotters out there. Like, they're struggling just to pass it around the perimeter.
And they're really struggling to get set up. No, it's the things that are struggling for this team are so mystifying in some ways, right? Like, the Pettersson thing is so hard to put your finger on. I can make a couple constructive suggestions based on what we're seeing, but like, doesn't solve the issue by any means. And likewise with the power play, it's like, you know, Rick Tocchet keeps saying it's mental, it's a shooting mentality thing. They're not shooting when they're supposed to. And I do see that, right? Like, there's just...
Well, and I thought it was really interesting and really astute of Tocchet that yesterday he added they're not shooting when they're supposed to, and then they're shooting when they're not supposed to as well.
Right.
Because that's 100% part of it. And it's easy to say, oh, just shoot, but there are bad times to shoot on the power play, and they're choosing a lot of them right now. And it's like, it's not as easy as, oh, they're trying to be too fancy and need to shoot more, because then they shoot in a bad situation.
But it's just weird. They have continuity. They have elite skill. Like, what are we talking about?
I think the power play... One of the among the many things that'll be interesting to see when they practice tomorrow will be what the power play looks like. And, you know, obviously Miller and Garland came off the power play in that game. Miller had the turnover that led to a goal against, of course. I'm kind of at the situation now where, okay, of course, we all know the best version of this power play should involve the perennial power play guys, Besser and Pettersson and Miller and Hughes, but just detonate it. Get Sprong up there, separate Pettersson and Miller and Hughes, you know, have two of them on one unit, one of them on the other. Put guys in uncomfortable, different situations. Do anything to kind of break them out of this rut. Give them a new situation. Force them to change their behavior. Because obviously the message and the emphasis on, okay, here's what you have to do differently, it's not working. It's not getting through on the power play right now. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Sonny texts in, not once has Jake DeBrusk's name come out of anyone's mouth or your mouth. That's not true. We have talked about Jake DeBrusk today.
Well, what's there to say?
But as Sonny says, DeBrusk is definitely counting his lucky stars because everyone is so focused on Pettersson.
100%.
It's true. We will have a Jake DeBrus conversation at some point about how poor it has looked through the first nine games of this season. One of the many concerning factors coming out of last night. All right, we'll take a break here. Sean Gentile from The Athletic will join us next. We'll do a little Canucks, but we've been pretty heavy on the doom and gloom. This is like an old school episode of Canucks Talk here today, Drancer. So we'll talk about some stories from around the NHL as well. Keep your texts coming in. As I said, very, very busy day in the Dunbar Lumber text line. So keep your thoughts coming in and we'll revisit them later on in the show. But up next, Sean Gentile here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep your thoughts coming in. We got an open segment coming up at the end of the show, so we'll dive back in to the inbox then. But now joining us on the line, he covers the NHL for The Athletic. One of our favorites, he is Sean Gentile. Sean, what's going on, man?
Fellas, what's good? Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy. Are you a Halloween guy?
I would say I'm like an appropriate level of Halloween guy.
You don't make it weird?
I mean, like, what's that?
You don't make it weird? You're not like weirdly into Halloween? You're just appropriately into Halloween.
I think we're on the same page with this. Yeah. Like you don't want to be a wet blanket. You want to have fun, but I don't know, man. Adult Halloween guys are—it's not for me.
Do you know the Frog and Toad Together books? The Arnold Lobel books.
Of course.
You know what I'm talking about, right? I was walking.
Absolutely.
I was walking on the seawall this morning with my dog, and a dad was obviously like taking his kid to school, and they were dressed in the like Frog and Toad on a bicycle. On their bike, like biking, and I was just like, oh, I like lost my mind. I was so excited, and then I made eye contact with the dad in the frog mask, and he was like, gave me like a cool guy nod, and I was just like, I love Halloween. This is so weird.
I gotta say the vibes at like elementary school drop off on Halloween are off the charts, absolutely off the charts. The kids are losing their minds with excitement. Okay, before we get into hockey with you, Sean, we got to do the mandatory Steelers check in with you, our Pittsburgh Steelers correspondent. And I mean, how about this? 6-2, leading the division, 3 wins in a row. Are you feeling good about this this year's version of the Steelers?
No, Russell Wilson's a fraud.
Do we lose Sean?
I think he was.
We have lost Sean. He hung up on the Halloween talk.
Yeah, he was just like, I'm an appropriate level of Halloween into Halloween. And then he was like, Frog and Toad costume.
And then
stories.
We just started talking to ourselves a bunch.
We're out. I'm out. You guys are weird.
I think that's our record for the longest we've gone, having dropped a guest without noticing that we dropped a guest. We just kept talking. Anyways, we'll get Sean Gentile back on the line here momentarily to talk about what he's seen from the Canucks, his thoughts about their up and down start and the loss last night against the New Jersey Devils, and everything else happening around the NHL as well. As mentioned, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. LJ sends in Canucks drama. At least we got that. It's awesome. I don't know if everyone's enjoying it as much as you are, LJ, but you're right. This team is never lacking for drama. So at least we've got that going. All right. I think we got Sean back on the line here. So Sean, I was asking you just about the Steelers. 6-2. Everything's looking great. Russell Wilson's coming in and winning games. How are you feeling about the Steelers?
I could hear like the entire question too.
That's weird.
So I was like, I was talking to myself for like a solid 10 seconds. Yeah, which is great. I didn't think Russ had that in him, honestly. Like, I thought that between age and the calf injury and all that stuff that he was just going to be too immobile to function. But, man, he's looked good the last couple of weeks. He's throwing the moon ball and doing what he has to do. Yeah, I'm like, I think the vibe here is that people are, I don't even want to say cautiously optimistic. I think they're like over the moon with how good things have gone the last couple of weeks. So I'm sure that, you know, that just means they're going to cruise for some kind of brutal loss against Baltimore and Washington or whatever. But no, it's been fun. Like he's definitely got some, he's still got some gas in the tank.
So the Canucks lose an ugly one last night, 6-0 against the Devils. And of course, it's always a hyped up game here, right? Because it's Quinn Hughes mm-hmm. versus his brothers in New Jersey. And then they come and give that dismal performance. And, you know, you look at the standings and the Canucks start has been fine. Not amazing, but certainly not a disaster, right? They're picking up points. I think they have points in 7 of 9 games to start the year. But there's also been some red flags, and they kind of all come to the fore after last night. From your perspective, I mean, how concerned should the Canucks and Canucks fans be, or should they be not concerned at all here on Halloween, October 31st?
I feel like a lot of it revolves around Pedersen, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It? Like, Durant, right? I just read your report cards on The Athletic. Like, you and Harm did the October report cards for you know, the whole team, and I read all of it, and that's still my takeaway, is that something's going on with him. Is he healthy? Is he not? He's shooting the puck significantly less. Like, he's, you know, it's like, I think it's three fewer shots per 60 this season versus last. The point production is way down. Doesn't look right. I feel like whatever stuff is going on along the margins, I think that all that stuff is what it is. If he doesn't look like himself over the course of a full season, I think stuff gets pretty fuzzy for them pretty quickly. So yeah, I think if I'm a Canucks fan, that's my concern. Everything else seems like it's going to shake out. Demko, you know, you hope he's back eventually and all that. All the other problems are relatively minor. The superstar center needs to look like a superstar center, and he hasn't really at any point this season.
Yeah, and the wild thing is, you know, obviously players go through slumps, right? But this is so long, it looks so ugly, and it happens directly after he was, you know, among the league leaders in points, right? He was player of the month in January, and then almost immediately after that, it's like a completely different version of the player. And, you know, we were saying earlier in the show, it's hard to even find examples of guys who've been this good and then struggled for this long directly after. And, you know, people texted in like, oh, Huberto, or, you know, like Tyler Seguin declining in Dallas. But all of these examples, right, the guys either way older or they weren't nearly as good and productive as Pedersen was anyway. Ways, it just feels like this is almost a unique situation, how extreme the difference is between what he was doing and what he's doing now.
Totally. And I mean, the playoffs are what they are. Like, they were what they were, right? Like, that's not the way anybody wanted it to happen, but it's the way it happened. So I think the thought was, you know, I don't know, like, being outside it, my thought was get some distance from the way the season ended. You know, maybe there's some nagging stuff that improves, some nagging injury that improves, and he gets to have a summer off and come back and start fresh. Maybe it's not like a revenge tour per se, but, you know, you kind of shake the Etch-a-Sketch and start over again. And that's, like, not the way it's happened. It's year over year, month over month decline, like you guys kind of alluded to. And I think that has to be concerning at this point.
How much does it change your expectations, right? Dom's model, Athletic's national analysts have been extremely high on Vancouver's chances this year. Have you seen anything in the early going? And specifically, have you seen anything out of Pedersen in the early going that has you rethinking what you expect from the Canucks this year?
I mean, not to just fall back on the stuff that you and Harm wrote in the report cards, but it's like, he's skating slower. The shot doesn't have the same velocity on it. Like, it's that to me is more concerning than just like a lack of production, right? Like, he's got one goal and he's got two expected goals. So this isn't an issue of, this isn't like him getting unlucky or, you know, bad bounces or whatever. He's basically he's basically getting what he's asked for. The results have, for the most part, matched the process. And I think that's the biggest concern, because we're still at a point in the season where, you know, it's still so early. You can look at stats just across the board where you're like, all right, this person's getting bit by shooting percentages, you know, whatever it might be. And it just doesn't feel like that way with him. And that's what would make me really nervous if I were on the other end of things.
Now, on the flip side for the Canucks, Quinn Hughes, through the first nine games, has looked really, really good. And obviously, he's coming off the Norris Trophy season. And, you know, the counting stats, obviously, like Cale Makar is racking up points. And that's easy to kind of, you know, I think that can be kind of a distraction or overshadow what Quinn Hughes is doing. But I look at it and just the burden he's being asked to carry right now, especially with Elias Pettersson, his situation happening. You know, JT Miller doesn't look 100% right now. Quinn Hughes is really asked to do everything for this team, and he's handling it extremely well in those circumstances. Is he closing the gap for the best defenseman in the world conversation with Cale Makar in your eyes?
Man, that's a great question, and I kind of felt you started asking it, and I was like, okay, this is going to turn into Quinn versus Cale.
That's right.
Part of me just doesn't. I don't know if I care. I feel bad almost that that's what the debate has turned into, because, you know, if we're 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road and Quinn Hughes' career doesn't quite measure up to Cale Makar's, like, that's like, who cares? That's not necessarily going to be, there's no shame in that. But at the same time, like, that's almost dismissive of how good Quinn Hughes has been too. We had this discussion on some level for some project where we were trying to place Cale Makar like in more of a historical, you know, top 100 all time sort of context. Like, we should not be so quick to just assume that Cale Makar is the best defenseman of his generation. And I don't know if I want to say that, you know, directly in relation to Quinn or whatever. But I think people seem like they've decided a little bit too quickly. Like, he hasn't been at it for that long,
yeah.
Right? Like we're talking 4+ seasons here. That's not 8. It's not 11. That's not a lifetime. There's plenty of time for other guys to catch up. And I think Quinn is at the head of that group. Absolutely. You look at what he's done this year. I mean, he's been as good as they've needed him to be with all those factors, like you guys said, at play, whether it's Pettersson or Miller or Demko being out. Like, they need him to be the dude, and he has been. And I'm not really sure what else you can ask for from a player of his caliber. Like, if he's not closing the gap right now, if you don't look at what he's doing and say that he's closing the gap, I'm not sure what else he would need to do.
Well, how about this? Makar versus Hughes head-to-head at the Four Nations Tournament. Where does that rank on tournament subplots?
Can we just see it at the Olympics?
I know. I'm getting into it.
I feel like
I've decided. I'm getting into the Four Nations. I'm just going to embrace it wholesale.
We need to make this, like, you need to drag me along with you on this, because I want to be into it. Like, I want to care about this as much as I cared about Olympic stuff, but like, I can't really do it.
Go,
not yet.
Go,
maybe whenever it rolls around, man. Like, we can bet like U.S. versus Canada stuff, and I can cheer for Quinn, and you can cheer for Cale. But I don't know.
I'm telling you right now. Here's the key. Go talk to a player who's not likely to be on a roster about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a great.
The fact that they're that excited about it. That's what's like hooked me, was like, you know, guys who aren't even going to be playing in it, who are just like, have takes and like, Team Sweden, don't sleep on Team Sweden, like, they're so stoked. So it's like, if that's rank and file NHL players, imagine the competitive level of the guys competing. You know what I mean?
All
so
right.
I gotta go
to the locker room in Pittsburgh and ask, you know, Drew O'Connor or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
like that about what they think.
I'm telling you,
that'll help.
I'm telling you, that's the key. That's what hooked me.
I'll take any and all bits of advice here, because, like I said, I want to love this thing, but I'm just not there yet.
It sounds like you're hedging for when the U.S. loses to Canada, Sean. You're like, this is a fake tournament, anyways. I didn't care about this.
Is that what I'm doing? It might be. That's what they do with World Juniors.
I was just about to say, I do that before every World Juniors. It's either if Canada wins, it's proof that we're the best. If we lose, it's like, it's not a real tournament anyways. Who cares?
Well, this one doesn't count.
All our best guys are in the NHL. Whatever. I don't care. All right. We're talking to Sean Gentile from The Athletic here at Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. So as mentioned, you're based in Pittsburgh, and we did just see the Penguins roll through, and it's gotten pretty ugly pretty quickly for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And obviously, you know, Crosby signed the extension right before the season gets going, and there's the feel-good video with him delivering season tickets and all that. So he's there. They've solved that question, but man, do they have a lot of questions beyond that. Like, what's the best-case scenario for the Pittsburgh Penguins from here on out for this season?
Oh, man. That they finish with, like, the fifth worst record in the league and win the lottery, probably.
Yeah, they need it.
It seems brutal.
Oh, that's tough, man.
Brutal. I'm glad you guys got to see him recently.
Yeah, like they're awful.
They're playing special hockey right now. It's like, it really is. It's one of the worst defensive teams I can remember watching here.
Yeah.
You know, in the last, certainly in the last, you know, 15 years or whatever. Just like slot shots galore. Guys like Jack St. Ivany getting major minutes, you know, on a third pair. Eric Karlsson is the worst possible version of Eric Karlsson right now. Just across the board. Yeah, there's not a lot working right there for sure.
So the solution to what ails the Pittsburgh Penguins is James Huggins. Pretty much.
I had a buddy. My buddy texted me, like, one of my friends from Pittsburgh. Like, he's a fan, but not a huge fan. He was already texting me about, like, the draft and if there are any generational prospects or whatever, because that's true Penguins fan behavior, right? Is you're just like, all right, let's pull out the horseshoe and the rabbit's foot and get incredibly lucky at the absolute opportune time and you know, just move on with our lives and just restart the process. So I told him, like, James Hagan's fine. he's not Connor Bedard, and he's certainly not, you know, a Connor McDavid or a Nathan MacKinnon type. So yeah, I don't know. I still think they look cooked. I don't know if it's cooked forever, but I don't see what the fix is for them this season. There aren't enough good NHL players on that roster. I think that's what it comes down to. That's a tough problem to fix when it's, you know, October 31st.
I feel like it's cooked forever, man. And here's why, because they look like they could still beat most NHL teams in a game of half-court hockey or half-rink hockey, but the moment you actually have to defend over 200 feet of ice, they just do not have the juice to do it. It's some of these breakdowns you're seeing with teams attacking them off the rush, certainly the breakdowns we saw in Vancouver, three of them, in fact, in 20 seconds or whatever it was, gone in 65 seconds. That's the sign of a team that I think is cooked.
It takes a lot of things going wrong on a lot of different levels to be as bad as they are right now. So it's like, is it disinterest? Is it a physical inability to do it? Is it frustration? Like, what is the cause of all this? And the answer is yes. it is all of these things, and that's a tough problem to solve, man, for sure.
Another team that's in the are they cooked conversation in the early going this year, and it hasn't been nearly as bad for the results for the Boston Bruins, right? 9 points through 10 games, but I know there's a lot of dissatisfaction there, and we just are always perennially waiting for the wheels to fall off and for that team to crash back down to earth. Is this the year it finally happens for the Bruins, Sean?
I think I need them to be bad for a while longer before I'm willing to write them off.
The moment, like, we bury them, we'll be wrong.
I feel like the three of us have talked about this plenty of points over the last couple of years. Like, ahead of the season, ahead of the play, like, whatever. Whenever you're like, this team is cooked, they rattle off 12 or 14 or something. So I feel like as soon as we do that, that's what's going to happen. But yeah, man, of course there's problems. Like, you know, I think you guys know, like, Elias Lindholm, he is what he is, right? Mm-hmm. He's not a true first line center, and they signed him to be that, and he hasn't lived up to it. But it's not just on him. I think on some level, it's, you know, obviously their problems aren't quite on the same level as Pittsburgh's, but, you know, it's a similar sort of vibe, because you're like, there's no one obvious fix here. Like, there's issues throughout that lineup and throughout the way that they're playing. And I think anytime you're talking about that, where you don't just have, you know, the lightning bolt solution to one question, you're playing with fire.
Sean, always appreciate it, man. Enjoy Halloween appropriately for a man of your age tonight, all right?
I'm going to quietly sit by my door, drink exactly 3 beers, and pass out candy bars to the local children. Thank you very much.
That's the perfect Halloween.
Yeah, it sounds great. little Jets Texans on the TV. Let's go.
we're getting crazy now, baby.
Yeah, and really crazy.
That was the best on Jets Texans. Good God.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it, man.
See you, boys.
That is Sean Gentile from The Athletic.
I might even mess around and check in on some Oilers Predators.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, yeah.
Going really crazy. Maybe, I'll be trick-or-treating.
Maybe a little taste of Kraken Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a dentist appointment.
For some reason, that's like one of the funniest things I've ever heard. You told me before the show that you were going to the dentist, and it's like, did you purposely schedule it on Halloween? I've never heard of somebody going to the dentist on Halloween. I guess it happens. They don't close down shop on Halloween, but what?
Non-game day, non-weekend. Right? It made the most sense. Canucks don't play, and I still get my weekend.
Yeah. Well, good luck at the dentist.
Thank you.
It seems like a bit of a buzzkill on Halloween.
No, I guess you gotta do it. My teeth will be so clean, and then I'll go buy some chocolate or something.
By the way, Clay texted in, how could you not be excited about best on best competition? Crosby, McDavid, Bedard. That gets me so excited. That's from Clay. I have been surprised. Well, not surprised, but I have been struck by the amount of skepticism towards the Four Nations, and I get it. It's not the Olympics. I understand that.
It's been so long
since we've had a best on best. That's the big difference between this and the 2016 World Cup, right? That was 2 years after Sochi, so it was still fresh. It was like, oh, okay, why are we doing this? Are we going to go to the Olympics? This is coming back after a massive amount of time.
And the only cool team was the anarchist team of Young Guns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Canada won, but it was like, the Team USA roster is still, like, made fun of in USA hockey circles, and in part it's because, like, Eichel, Matthews, mm-hmm. JT Miller, everyone forgets, but JT Miller was on the Young Guns team. They put all the juice from both teams on one team, and it was amazing, but it took all the juice away from the other teams, including Canada, who actually won the tournament. So, no, that tournament was without juice.
I do think a big part of it was, well, one, splitting up the talent, right, from certain countries, and then also it's coming on the heels of the Olympics. Now there's been so much time since the last best on best, the excitement is going to be there. As you said, the players, that's what matters more than anything, is are the players hyped? Because if the players are excited and bought in, then as soon as you sit down to watch it and you see the intensity, you're going to get excited and bought in. So I'm all on board. I love best on best. It's going to be fantastic, I think.
Yeah, and talking to some players who, again, aren't even like going to be on rosters, and hearing them have like takes and be so excited for, you know, their teammates, their country, stuff like that, like that's what got me pumped. I think it's going to be a great
event. By the way, you're talking about Four Nations storylines, and this one won't be as much of a national one as Makar versus Hughes could be, but a Vancouver Four Nations one. Elias Pettersson on Team Sweden going up against JT Miller and Quinn Hughes and maybe Brock Besser on Team USA. You think that's going to get talked about a little bit? You think that's going to get analyzed a little bit when it happens?
Does Petey make the team?
That's another one.
He will, I'm sure. But
I'm hard-pressed to believe they would leave him off, but I guess there's a world where they do.
You'd hope not.
Wow.
You hope not, but like, you know, it's not like Sweden's not deep.
They got a lot of good players.
You know, like that. I mean, they're, again, I'm telling you straight from NHL players that I've chatted with, like, they think Sweden might have the best team. They honestly do. I think it's Team USA, but they're, you know, Sweden's depth at this point is ludicrous. And currently, Elias Pettersson is 31st among Swedish-born players in terms of points this season. you know?
Yep.
It's not like they're hard pressed for centers.
They've got options.
Put it this way, like, in a world where Sweden can go to the tournament and roll out Lindholm and Zibanejad, right? And Joel Eriksson Ek on a third line and William Nylander playing center now, right? Like,
William Karlsson, if they want. Karlsson. There's a lot of options.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. Like, Wennberg, right? Like, Pettersson does have to get his game in gear to sort of leave no doubt here. Leo Karlsson should be on that team. So, it's a loaded country, man.
They're really good at hockey.
Yep.
It's going to be fun. I'm stoked.
Yeah, now you were already on board, though.
Oh, no, I've always been on board. Yeah. I've been on board from day one. I love international hockey. I'm willing to get hyped for this one, no doubt about it. Okay, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll go back into the inbox and look back at last night a little bit more and what to expect from the Canucks going forward at practice tomorrow as they head down to California for a road trip as well, starting on the weekend against San Jose. Final segment coming up here, Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintec Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. We were talking about the Four Nations tournament and, you know, Canucks related potential storylines and Elias Pettersson related potential storylines as well, right? And obviously there's levels. There's what happens if he doesn't make the team. There's he does make the team and he's facing off against his teammates, Quinn Hughes and JT Miller.
He'll make
on the team,
team
USA.
I think
this is a great one that I hadn't considered, though. Unsigned in the inbox. What happens if Petey struggles, goes to the Four Nations, lights it up, and then comes back and struggles more?
Who did that happen to? That happened to Pavel Dimitra.
Yes.
In 2010.
Yes, that's so good at the Olympics.
And he was struggling all season, goes to play for Slovakia, and is like absolutely dominant at the Vancouver Olympics. And that was absolutely a problem locally.
Yes. Yes.
So that would be the Pavel Dimitra.
That's one I hadn't even considered. There we go. We're creating new scenarios to preemptively get upset or start being concerned about the months in the future from now. But I like that one from an unsigned listener in the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right. So we're still, you know, chewing on what we saw last night from the Canucks and obviously what we didn't see from the Canucks as well. And one thing that you and I haven't really talked about much here, but is obviously a part of the story from last night, is Archer Shelovs. And it's his third start of the season. It's another one where the numbers are really, really ugly. And I think it's makes sense that we didn't lead talking about Archer Shelovs, right? Because I don't think it's fair to say he was the problem last night. There was a lot of problems for the team. They did not play well in front of him. But again, even, you know, take out the goals, and there's certainly goals he could have had in the mix there. There were a lot of moments where he looked unsteady, right? Where he's making a save, but then he's looking, he's not sure if he has it. He's looking behind him, see if it's dribbling out, right? He's losing his nets on some of the cross crease plays, things like that. So it's the goals, but it's also just what it looks like. And I mean, the Canucks have been very fortunate, and, you know, also they signed Kevin Lankinen, so credit to them for making that happen. But Kevin Lankinen's been so good for them, it has reduced the level of importance for Archer Shelov's performance, but you still need a credible backup goalie who you have some level of confidence putting in there, and Shelov's doesn't look like that right now for them. And so
797 save percentage,
tough. And like you can say all 15. You can go through the goals and say, oh, that's a tough one, but
no.
It's got to be higher than that. It's got to be way higher than that.
No, there's too many softies in there. 15 goals against on 74 shots. According to Natural Stat Trick, only Alexander Georgiev, who's played twice as many games, has a lower goal saved above average. 7.3 goals allowed beyond what you'd expect from an average goaltender. Now, there's a lot of flaws with that metric, but just as a quick catch-all.
Yep.
not good.
Well,
not good enough.
It matches the eye test as well.
Yeah.
Right? Like what we're seeing.
Well, and then the difference, the discrepancy between Lankinen couldn't be sharper, right? Like Lankinen's top 10 in this metric. So he's been really good, and we know that. I don't know what to say. Like it wasn't the point shot issue for Shelov's yesterday. Or right? Like it was rush chances. They were high quality chances. He definitely, you know, Myers post game noted that they'd hung Artie out to dry, and that's correct. That's totally fair. I'd say that was the least culpable he's been in a Canucks game all season.
Yeah, they got shut out. So
yeah,
it's not like you can't point him and be like, he cost them the game, right?
But he wasn't at a good enough level for them to win either.
He didn't give him the chance to get back into the game at any point or stay in the game.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to really say about it. Like the first goal, I think you'd like him to have because it's an unscreened rush wrist shot. Now, Nico Hischier's going a million miles per hour and has space and time to take a spot, and he did.
He comes off a cross ice pass as well, but he has time to get over and get set and get square.
Yeah, and the second one, no chance. I mean, he's not even, there's no goalie in the world who was going to cross the crease quickly enough to get the second one. The third one, likewise. The fifth one, the Jack Hughes in the blue paint. I mean, there were, you know, maybe you'd want better on one of two. I think that was true of the Tampa Bay game, too. Maybe there was one or two there that mattered. You got to throw him out again, I think, against Anaheim or San Jose.
Not against San Jose. I don't think you can give him another start in a row.
I think it would be cool. I think it would be a good message.
I don't think you can sit Lankinen again, though. Like, that's a bad message to Lankinen.
What do you mean?
He's been amazing. You're going to bench him after this guy let in six goals?
No, you're clearly the guy, man. Like, we need to have two guys going here.
I think you got to go back to Lankinen.
Well, the team's plan has been to carry three goaltenders. Where I'm curious is when Demko's back, is that still in the cards, right? Like, how much better does Shelov have to play to stay on the NHL roster all season?
Mm-hmm.
Because he is waiver exempt, right? So there's the ability to, you know, use him at the very least the way the club's currently using Brännström, who's only going to be waiver exempt for a little while longer, and Baines, who will be waiver exempt for much of the season, to sort of toll daily space, right? So once Demko comes back, Shelov's kind of becomes the Brännström down and up, which the Canucks have done again today, by the way. So,
yep.
I'm curious to see if there's real stakes for him in terms of earning, I guess he's on a one-way, but in terms of staying on the NHL roster here. And then, yeah, I would love to see them go back to him right away. I think that would be a cool way to show confidence in him and to make sure you're not letting your team off the hook. You know, like,
you're not blaming it on him.
You're not blaming it on him. You're turning up, in some ways, you're turning up the difficulty, right? There's no Lankinen safety blanket coming. Like, we need to put in a better team-level performance even against San Jose. Let's get back on track. Let's build his confidence up. Don't let him sit in that performance the way to American election night on Tuesday. Like, just go right back to him on Saturday. Lankinen's a pro, man. Like, and I don't think there's any disrespect shown because it's San Jose. It's not a premium matchup. And Lankinen should feel pretty confident that he's the guy right now. So I think you can go away from him, and then Lankinen still gets, like, he gets a bit of a rest, and then he gets a tune-up game before you face LA, in a game that I think we're all far more interested to see, right? Like, our expectations.
No, and then they have Edmonton on Saturday coming back at home, too. So I could even see going Shelov's Lankinen, Shelov's Lankinen to get Lankinen in against Edmonton, potentially, depending on how Shelov's performs.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I expect Lankinen to play against San Jose. I'm just saying I could see the argument for going right back to Shelov's and then riding Lankinen through the rest of the week. But I like the idea. Like, I do think this team at the very least needs to pick a spot to try and rebuild Shelov's confidence at this point, because I mean, are we even sure he's the best backup option for this team?
Well, that's the next question.
You know, in Demko's absence?
And are you, like, at a certain point, is it okay? It's a confidence hit for him to go down to the AHL, right? Obviously, that's a tough blow for a guy who came in number one on the depth chart, started opening night, played for them in the playoffs last year. If you send him down to Abbotsford, that's really tough to deal with. But you know what else is really tough to deal with is struggling at the NHL level and letting in a ton of goals every game you're out there and having your confidence worn down that way as well,
yeah,
right? You get there. I'm not saying either one is an easy decision, but it has to be in the cards or has to be at least something you talk about at a certain point here.
Neither Tolopilo or Yuri Patera are north of 900 in the AHL in the early going either. So, you know, this team needs Demko back, and they need Demko back in part because no matter who, no matter what your goalie situation is, and Vancouver's is more complicated than most, like the difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team is often like, do you go 500 or 250 in the 25 games your depth goaltenders start?
Yep.
Right? Now, if it's Lankinen, who's serving as like a 1A or 1B to Demko, I mean, you're feeling very good about Vancouver's goaltending tandem. But it, but right now, you know, how do you even spot Lankinen a rest? Like, if Demko's out another month, for example, right? Could be longer, could be shorter. Hopefully it's shorter. I mean, how many games do you want to see Shelovs even play in the month of November at this point? Like, we're talking about spots starting him to rebuild his confidence. We're not talking about Lankinen's workload and managing that workload. And the schedule is going to become a little bit more condensed here. It's been pretty chill.
Yep.
Through October.
Although it doesn't even really get that much more condensed until like the third week of November.
Yeah, or, the 20s, yeah.
Yeah, they've got a back-to-back, the 16th and 17th, home back-to-back, the Blackhawks and the Preds on a Saturday, Sunday, and then the next week, the 26th and the 27th, road back-to-back, the Bruins and the Penguins.
It, for sure, but at the end of the day, you're still looking at 13 games in 30 days,
yep.
Right? Like, you're still looking at three starts at least this month where you're going to want a depth goaltender to play it. Now, again, hopefully Demko is playing some of them, but you don't want Lankinen playing more than 10 over a 30-game stretch, I would think. So that's still three starts, and it's been tough for Shelovs. So couple quick takeaways is just they got to manage that workload, and I think to manage that workload best, they got to rebuild Shelovs' confidence a bit. They've got a good opportunity to do so with two sort of minnow teams coming up to start this California road trip. I would love to see him get one of those. If he doesn't, I think that would warrant some criticism. And then,
yeah, he's got to get one of them.
Yeah,
I would make it Anaheim, but yes, you'd think he gets one of those games.
And then, although Anaheim's the tougher opponent,
it's true,
right? So again, like I want to see him go right back, them go right back to Shelovs. And then the last thing is, man, has Kevin Lankinen saved their bacon. I know they were doing all those rush drills, and I kept contextualizing it, but those first few days of training camp, I was sitting
there. The goalies were not good.
I was sitting there, and I was just like, I should have been more worried about the goalies. Like, I don't think I was worried enough coming in. And then, you know, the day after that Saturday when they signed Lankinen, it was like, oh, man, that is huge for this team. That's exactly the type of player they need. And, I mean, he's been even more immense than I think we reasonably could have expected, but I don't think it's hyperbole to say that he's saved the Canucks bacon in the month of October.
No, he's been fantastic. And look, he's easily taken over the crease from Artur Shelovs, right? It's not even a contest right now how good he's been. And obviously the gap between him and Shelovs. And yeah, he's going to have to play a very, very heavy load here. You got to think until Thatcher Demko is able to return.
And maybe even then.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, obviously it'll go down, but like, it's not like you're going to all of a sudden start Thatcher Demko, you know, 80% of games or 75% of games as soon as he gets back.
No,
right?
but the goal surely is going to be to ramp Demko up to the point where he can be an everyday guy come playoff time.
Yes,
so
but you do that slowly, I would think, certainly out of the gates, dealing with this type of injury here.
Yeah, you would hope so.
Jason in North Van texts in, we shouldn't take the Sharks lightly with how we're playing. That's from Jason in North Vancouver. Earlier in the show, Mike, the urologist from Brockville, said, I'll be shook if they don't respond with a good road trip here. And it's one of those tough situations, right? Because you've got the Sharks and the Ducks and glass half full. It's like, all right, hey, two opponents that we should be a lot better than. We have a good chance to win, get some good feeling back, some momentum, some confidence, all of that. But then it always comes with the caveat of, well, but you haven't beat anyone yet, right? You haven't looked good in the games against the real top of the league team. So there's only so much you can prove, but yeah, certainly better to go out and take care of business in those games than the alternative.
Well, and I consider the Kings to be robust competition.
Yeah, the Kings are in a different category, obviously, than the Sharks and the Ducks.
And I mean, not that they're great, but the Canucks have not matched up well with them.
No.
Also, do you get the sense, having watched in quick succession here, like Florida, Vancouver handed them you know, one of three losses that they had in eight games without both Barkov and Tkachuk. I mean, monstrous stuff. Tampa Bay, New Jersey, Carolina in quick succession. Like, is the West weak?
It might be, given what's going on in Colorado. And now we'll see when...
I don't think the West's very good.
We'll see, you know, when McDavid gets back, how that looks, and if Edmonton can kind of get up to full speed,
they
how
will.
Quickly
they will.
Do.
Edmonton's going to get up to full speed. Winnipeg looks so good. They look so good. And it's not just the winning. It's the way that they're winning. It's the way that they're playing as a team. Their team game looks great. Dallas, obviously. And then, you know, I buy the Minnesota glow up in part because it never made sense that they sucked that much last season.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, if you have Kirill Kaprizov, we talk a lot about it being a star-driven league. It's like, okay, you have one of the five best wingers on the planet. Like, yeah, that should be enough to make you pretty imposing, especially because they have pretty good depth, like, and Gustafsson's been great for them. But yeah, I mean, I just, when I think about the East, when I think about Florida, when I think about Tampa, when I think about Toronto, honestly, even when I think about, like, Stryver-class teams in the East, like Ottawa, Buffalo, you know, the New York Islanders, they feel a little bit more robust than your like St. Louis Blues tier teams in the West.
Yep.
So I don't know, the West and the Pacific being a little bit softer than maybe we even expected. And I don't think we had huge expectations.
Certainly not for the Pacific.
No. Well, Kings at least look like a playoff team.
And in the Knights are, they're picking up points. I know there's some concerns in their underlying numbers.
Yeah. I'm not concerned about the Knights.
I wouldn't be either. I mean, they're plus 16 goal differential on the season. So 682 points percentage for Vegas. So, I mean, even in a sense, the Pacific, right? If you factor in Vegas, LA playing pretty well.
Yeah.
Edmonton
Seattle.
Is kind of an asterisk at this point.
Yeah.
We expect them to be really good. And so it's not as if it's been a disaster.
No. Seattle and LA look like playoff caliber teams, which isn't to say they'll make the playoffs, but they look like top eight teams in a conference.
Yeah.
But again, like, I don't know that I'd say that they're better than Ottawa. You know what I mean? In fact, I would say they're not as good as Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wouldn't say that they're as good as Buffalo. They're not as talented as Buffalo. So it's like you sort of work your way down the list, and it's like a team that I consider to be a playoff caliber team in the West, I think would be on the outside looking in the East, and that is sort of just an interesting dynamic. Now, I guess both a thing to keep in mind as we sort of evaluate the team, but also I suppose an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
If this team can get right, can get their game in order, and I believe that they can. There's plenty of time left, and we know that they're going to shake things up if they don't. You know, the opportunity knocks in this conference without question, given the relative strength of the East.
And interesting that they haven't played a top team from the West yet, right? Their Western Conference opponents
Chicago?
Calgary and Chicago.
Yeah.
So we're still waiting to see what it looks like against the rest of the West for the Vancouver Canucks. All right, final few minutes of the show here. And, you know, the Canucks had the day off today. And I thought Rick Tocchet's commentary after the game last night was interesting, because there's always, I think, a demand, an appetite for fans after a performance like that to hear the head coach really lay into the team. I thought Rick Tocchet was more critical of the Canucks after Carolina.
You could hear him over the banging.
Yes.
I couldn't make any of it out. So
he was more critical about them after the Carolina loss.
Chuck, 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 chuck. That's what it sounded like when I tried to listen to Rick Tocchet yesterday.
And obviously there's a method to that, right? Like, this is something we see with coaches.
No. To what Rick Tocchet said.
Yeah, not to the banging. No, this is something we see from coaches, right? Often in the worst performances, that's not when you go the hardest at a team, right? And he'd already been critical of them that week, and it felt like he eased off just a little bit and said, you know, there's the day off. We just got to flush it. We can't dwell on it too much. But I am also very curious.
Isn't that a problem, though?
What?
Rick Tocchet, like, remember we talked about it a lot last season where it was like, this game didn't even matter, and the team's so mad. Like, there was a sense that losses were a problem last year that, you know, Rick Tocchet's been very circumspect in his commentary. What does that say? Like, there is something there. I'm sure of it. I'm not saying that, you know, the coach thinks his team is fragile or anything like that necessarily, but I find it interesting how significant a departure from this team's commentary last night. Like, the players crushed themselves, I thought, post-game. Miller, Myers, etc. But Tockett almost seemed to do the, like, build up your team when they're down thing, which he just didn't do last
year. So glass half full, and I don't even necessarily believe this, but do you think it's because the players were crushing themselves that he felt like, you know what I mean? Because
there's always
the thing, right, where it shouldn't be always the coach doing it. They should be able to do it themselves.
Like an evolution of standards.
Yeah,
thing.
It's a reflection that, okay, the players are more capable of doing that part of it themselves now.
I don't know if I'm buying, but I'm not selling.
I don't know if I'm buying it either, but I just thought it was worth throwing it out there.
I'm not selling. It's a good theory.
Yeah. But because you're right. Like, I think back to the two ones that stand out to my mind in terms of Rick Tockett really, you know, like calling the team out on the carpet. The early game against Seattle, right, in the season he took over from Bruce Boudreau mid-season.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he exactly used the word soft, but he came up really close to the precipice of calling the team soft, right? And that, I think...
He went full Gerard Mayo?
Directly after that, they had the like back to elementary school practice, right, where it's like stop start and he's moving guys around on the ice. And then obviously the one at the beginning of the year against Philadelphia last year, right, which is who are we to think we're anybody.
But it felt like every time they lost he was killing them last year.
Yeah, not every time.
Often.
But either, you're right. There was a higher level of regular criticism.
Not every time. They lost like six games the whole year. Like it was a miraculous season, right? Like, but every time it was stunning how unacceptable it was.
So anyway,
like we talked about it a lot last year. I'm not off.
Oh, no, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not off base here, right?
No, absolutely. Okay. I mean, he was very direct.
Yeah.
Right? He wasn't sugarcoating it. And I'm not saying he's even sugarcoating it now. I guess he is a little bit. But it just struck me that he really seemed to ease off. You know, he's very critical of the power play. But beyond that, it was very much the, we got to move on. We got to flush it. Guys got to focus on their own game and do some work tomorrow and all that. With that context in mind, I think you bring up a good point, right? How different that tone is from the Rick Tockett of last year and even, you know, the season he took over from Boudreau. I mean, I'm kind of curious to see what we get at practice tomorrow, right? Because the traditional thing would be, you know, we've talked about it, right? It's the consequences day. You've had a really bad effort as a team. So at practice, there's going to be big consequences and everything's going to get shook up and guys are going to be in different spots. And I'm going to tell you how angry I am at you by moving everything around, right? Why are you laughing?
I love consequence day. I just love the phrase. It's a consequence practice. I love
that's part of the Canucks talk lexicon.
No, I know.
Consequence day.
You know what? I'd just forgotten about it, but it's such a good phrase.
But his tone last night would maybe suggest maybe we won't see that. So I'm very curious to see just how deep the changes are, what the tone of the practice is, all of those things. I think if you're looking for anywhere where there could be a big shakeup, it would be on the power play. But I also look at if you're just focused on putting the best lineup forward to win these games on this next road trip, there's a lot of things that come to mind. Like, I think Daniel Sprong has made a really good case to get more minutes since he's coming back into the lineup, right? And when you consider how much other forwards are struggling to get shots off and his shooting mentality, I think that's a guy that you have to think pretty heavily about moving up in the lineup.
We at least got to see him on the power play, right?
If you're going away from Connor Garland as the fifth guy, you're desperately needing more shots, then I think, yes, that would make a lot of sense.
Say you're going away from Connor Garland?
Well, he got taken off for one
But so did JT.
Night.
I mean,
absolutely.
You might need a more dramatic, one thing teams sometimes do when it's like a mentality thing or when a power play struggles this much is like completely even ice time and separate your best players.
Yes.
And so put them into a competitive environment.
There's no like 1, 2, 3, 4 lines. It's just 4 lines of roughly equal talent. You know what I mean?
Or specifically on the power play where you have 2 units that are roughly equivalent, right? And it's like Hughes and Besser on one and Miller and Patterson on the other. And
then you fill it out around it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
And you challenge them to get their stuff together. And
not
does,
only
will
would
play.
I do that, but I would do like Miller is on one of the power play units, maybe, and Hughes and Patterson on the other one. And also Miller's not in his normal position. Also, he's on the other side of the ice or something, right? Like I would try to make it as different and unusual as possible for the star players to try to get them thinking differently and get them out of their rut on the power play. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see what Rick Tockett chooses to do, what buttons he chooses to press when the Canucks get back to practice tomorrow.
Consequences day.
Consequences day. Maybe. We'll see.
Hey, and a happy Canucks Talk Halloween to all of you and your families. Be safe out there. Have fun. Wear great costumes. And make sure to give me a cool guy nod if you bike by on the seawall wearing a frog costume.
In a sick costume. All right. Have a great Halloween, everyone. We're back tomorrow for more Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.